The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Greetings and welcome to another episode of Canadian History X. If you'd like to support the podcast, you can. Just go to patreon.com/CanadaEHX. You can support the podcast for as little as $3 a month. You can also donate to the podcast at my website. Go to CanadaEHX.com. Today, I'm talking with Miss Emily. Miss Emily is a Kingston-based artist who just released her first ever live album called Live at the Isabel. She also recently won the Maple Blues Female Artist of the Year, the New Artist of the Year, and the Sapphire Video Award. Gene Simmons has said she's the best we've ever heard from an unsigned artist, and I had the chance to talk with her about, you know, COVID, her album, her inspirations, and much more. So enough of me talking about her, let's get to the interview. So how have things been during the pandemic and the lockdown over the past 7 months, I think?
I know, we've lost count.
Pretty much.
Things have been, you know, good. I feel like I feel like a bit of an idiot if I say anything but good, because I mean, I am an entertainer and my job is to make people feel good. So why stop now? So I just said things have changed. So I try and keep a good attitude. Mm-hmm. And that's nobody in my family is sick. And I don't know, I'm all about a good attitude. Might as well.
I guess the album was recorded pre-pandemic, but did the pandemic impact anything with the album post-recording?
So I recorded this album over the course of about 2.5 years. It was just tracks that were recorded on the soundboard at these live performances. I had no intention of making a live album at all. I was supposed to go into the Bathhouse studio here in Kingston with Gord Sinclair, who was producing a studio album for me the end of March. And so timing being everything this year, that didn't happen. So over the course of the next few months, I was like, well, it doesn't look like this is ending anytime soon. So I guess I better create something out of nothing. And so there was no pre-planning with this album at all. And when I finally put it together, it was literally weeks. It was just literally weeks of work, not months or years. It was weeks of work, make it happen, call in the troops. Everybody works at a speedy pace and out she goes.
It kind of answers my next question. I was going to say why did you release a live album? But I guess the pandemic kind of forced your hand in that regard.
Yeah, it's been 3 years since my last studio album. It was released October 2017. And although we didn't, I released it with a couple guys from the Tragically Hip, and we happened to release it a week after Gord Downie passed away. So timing being everything, we released it. We did two shows here in Kingston to celebrate the release of the album. And then we didn't do anything with the record. I did nothing with the record for another several months because I just didn't, it just was a sad time for all of us and just didn't seem to make sense. So, I mean, the last record was such a weird situation. I knew I needed something out this year. And so, so here we are.
You have amazing timing with your albums, it seems.
Or I don't. I mean, I don't know. I know. It's good. There's that good attitude again, Craig. It really comes in handy.
Absolutely. So kind of the year kicked off really well. How was it winning the Female Vocalist of the Year to kind of kick off your 2020?
Amazing. Yeah. Just being nominated for some Maple Blues Awards was like a super highlight of my life for sure. Having not really been recognized outside of the little communities that I have always played in, it was just nice. And it was a win, I thought, for my, I don't like to call them fans, but my music supporters, my longtime music supporters, because they've put in a lot of time and energy into celebrating what I do and supporting what I do. And I felt like it was a win for a lot of us who are kind of on this little team of mine. So.
And you have an album slated for next year.
I do. Studio album. So we're already getting creative, because the way we've always made albums is like, you know, smush a bunch of people into a room and do a bunch of live off the floor stuff. Well, that's really doesn't look like we're going to be able to make records like that anytime soon. And do I mm-hmm. want to put this off indefinitely? No. So I'm starting the process of brainstorming with my producer, Gord Sinclair. And we're, we might call in some different troops for this one. Kind of all over, because it seems to be the way people are making music right now. And I think that's the most responsible way to do it, is to not shove people in a room. So we're going to try and, you know, weigh our options for safety first and mm-hmm. go from there.
And now the album's out October 30th, but you've released the kind of the first single off of it, the live single. So tell me about The Sellout and kind of how that song came about.
So we released The Sellout the middle of October, and that song, there's a studio recorded version that I actually recorded about 10 years ago, believe it or not. And it was on my 2014 album, Rise. And that was a record I made that I'm really proud of, but I literally did nothing with that record. So I released it, did a big party here in Kingston, 500, 600 people showed up. We had a great time, and that was it. And much more music back in the day, played a video I made for the recorded version of The Sellout, the studio version of The Sellout. That's how old that song is. So it's never really seen the light of day, and I think it's probably one of the best tunes I've ever written. So it was time for it to shine. And I mean, it was written from a very honest place of, you know, being made fun of online for being a girl and playing music, and someone called me a sellout, and I was like, fine, and I'll sell it to you and to you and to you, and like, bring it on.
So that's weird to say that you're a sellout for doing music just because you're, you know, a girl.
Well, I'm a full-time musician of 16 years. I was a single mom for a lot of that. I am now married, and fantastic timing, especially now that we're in the pandemic. It's a whole other person with an income. But back in the day, like, I played 250 plus shows a year, mostly bar shows, very not glamorous. I did a ton of my own material, always have, but I also sang a lot of CCR covers and Dixie Chicks covers. And It's Your Wedding? Sure, I'll play your cheesy Celine Dion love song. Like, I don't, you know, if you're a full-time musician who has a mm-hmm. mortgage, which I did as well, and a full-time dependent, being my child, who likes to eat and, I don't know, have fitting shoes, you got to find a way. The person was speaking their truth, but, like, they don't friggin' know.
Yeah.
Nobody knows except for the other people who do what I do. And now I get to be a little more selective. Mm-hmm. Awesome. but anybody who's in my shoes and has done this for years knows that, okay, you have that corporate gig that you know will kind of, you might not enjoy it, but it's going to pay your mortgage for the month.
Mm-hmm.
Tough decisions, you know.
You got to do what you got to do. Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So making the live album, is there any kind of special challenges to making a live album versus a studio album in normal times, I guess, you know, not pandemic times?
I saved a lot of money. I felt like I had any money set aside to spend, particularly for a live album. So it was great that, you know, the musicians are already paid. There was no studio. I'd already, most of these shows, I rented the theater. I produced all these shows. And then there was a couple that were produced by the theater, I didn't have to rent the space, but mm-hmm. I still, you know, produced the show myself. So Yeah. So saving money, that was a big difference. I had a lot of work to do myself. I essentially produced the album myself because I had to decide what had to happen mm-hmm. with it, and sifting through all the music and figuring out where everything goes order wise and stuff. I was taking on a lot more jobs, but welcome to the music industry in Canada, my friend.
Yeah. What do you hope people get from your music and the new album, especially kind of as things are now?
You know, it's been brought to my attention that a live album right now is actually incredibly appropriate because we can't go see live music, and we have, you know, these, that theater holds 500 people and all those shows are sold out. So that hearing the audience is awesome. Mm-hmm. Even when I listen to it, I'm like, that's why I listen to it actually, is to hear the audience applaud after I sing the song. What a novel idea. It's been a while. So, yeah, that's, I think releasing this album, I mean, it all happened. It was all meant to be. And I'm really, really happy that it's a live record and not a studio album, actually. This was the time for it. Mm-hmm.
Kind of related to that, I like to ask various artists when I interview them, especially with COVID, do you feel like people are seeing now how important the arts are to our lives because of the time that we have to spend at home in lockdown, not going out? So whether it's music or books or TV, are we kind of starting to see how important arts are to us?
I hope so. I think I am personally, and I think, and I've heard from a lot of people who have reached out on my social media pages, and they seem very much connected to the arts community even more so. My little fan base is all over the world. I have this really cool group of people who follow my music, and they literally are from all over the world. And so if watching them come together and make friendships amongst the group of them and stuff, and hear them kind of, or watch the chat mm-hmm. on some of the posts that I make and videos I post. Yeah, I think there's even more of an appreciation than there was before. I hope it sticks with us. Mm-hmm. I hope we remember that this is an important factor, that an important fabric that makes up this country and makes up this world. And I really hope that that sticks. You know, we've kind of gotten used to the new normal. Well, I hope some things don't go back to the way they were, and appreciation for the arts, I think, is one of them.
Kind of just talking about your influences, you mentioned CCR. I'm guessing Celine Dion isn't an influence, but just because of what you said. But what are some of the main influences? Nothing against her. Yeah, no, I get it.
I'm not an idiot.
But what are some of your main influences in music and in your own songwriting and everything?
I'm really fortunate because I'm a child of the 80s. I was born in the 80s, and my parents could have had me listening to the worst music ever created in the history of time. But sorry, 80s music lovers. There's some good stuff in there, but I'm really fortunate. My parents had records. I grew up on Carole King's Tapestry and a ton of old soul music. Otis Redding, Sam Cooke, Aretha Franklin, lots of Ray Charles, Stevie Wonder, that's what I grew up on. And so I think that's really helped shape what I do. And then more recently, you know, in the past 20 years, I've listened to a lot of Susan Tedeschi. Before the Tedeschi Truck stuff, though, like her solo stuff, I love it. And as a teenager and in my 20s, I listened to Sheryl Crow before she went country. I don't know, like... A lot of my influence really in my whole life also has been local music. I grew up in a small a village called Milford in Prince Edward County. And there was a great music scene in Prince Edward County growing up. It was very rural, but those people who played music at the town hall shows and the festival, little mini festivals and fairs and stuff, that's what I drew from that as well. And also the Kingston music scene, I don't have to tell you. It's, you know, famous music scene of mm-hmm. amazing artists. And that continues to this day of all ages, mm-hmm. all ages, which is so cool too. So always influenced by that.
It's kind of hard to say because we don't really know what the future holds, especially now. But what's kind of on tap for you coming into 2021, other than the studio album?
I hope live music. I there was some really brave venues that hosted shows this past the past couple months, and I've got a couple more in a theater and another live music venue over the next couple months. I hope those doors open up. I am booked to go out west in April because there's some venues that are brave and they're following the rules. And that's great for someone like me because I was doing some traveling across the country. And, you know, my daughter is 15 now. So now I can leave her for a little bit longer chunks of time, like up to 2 or 3 weeks. Big deal if you're me. And so I hope more music, more live music opportunities. We're going to find a way. We're not going to cancel the entire festival season of 21. We're not going to do it because the people are already trying to figure out how they can make it work. We'll follow rules. We'll figure it out. We will do it. There will be live music, people. I promise.
Do you feel like people are being really innovative with those, with live shows? Like you're seeing like Zoom shows, you're seeing people in their cars, things like that. So are people really starting to like, we need music, we need arts. Let's figure out a way to do this that we're not endangering everybody.
Absolutely. You know, I did my first live stream performance on Facebook. I think it was March 16th or March 18th or something. It was it was like right out of the gate in the first weekend. And I wasn't the only one, obviously. And of course the live stream shows grew from there. And now you have, I've done a couple now at theaters. So festivals or theaters have gone online with full sound and light tech and a stage, and we film it and people can watch from home. So now I have my full band there. We haven't learned how to pay for that really yet, that's the next step. You know, the online tip jar, people were really generous at first, but of course everybody is hurting for the most part. So that's, you know, I don't know how long we can actually sustain that, but I'm impressed with what people have done, and I know I'm open to suggestions always. So, you know, if you have any great ideas, let me know.
And in regards to that, how can people, it's kind of my last question, but how can people get in touch with you, find your music, find out more about you, maybe see some of the videos that you put together? So how do they learn more about you?
So I have a website, themissemily.com. And I have CDs for sale on it now. We just launched, I haven't even announced it officially, but we just launched a merch shop for the CD sales, so I can ship those all over. Of course, all the digital streaming platforms have my music, including the new album. And I am very active online, always have been, because I don't tour extensively 10 months a year or anything like that, because I am a mom and have to focus a lot of my career close to home. So I have a very busy Facebook page, facebook.com/themissemilymusic. But if you just do a Miss Emily search, hopefully it comes up. I do weekly videos every Monday. We call it Miss Emily Mondays, and I do a weekly video. There's lots of other good stuff on there, and there's really cool humans that interact on that page. Mm-hmm. And then of course, Twitter and Instagram at themissemily. I'm on there a lot, and I always love to hear from people, so I always encourage people to write me, message me, tag me and stuff. Let me know what's up. I'm into it.
I hope you enjoyed that interview with Miss Emily, and I encourage you to check out her website. You can reach me at craig@canadaehx.com. You can visit my website where you'll find hundreds of articles on Canada's history, as well as all my podcast episodes. Just go to canadaehx.com. And again, you can support the podcast for as little as $3 a month. Just go to patreon.com/canadaehx. Thanks, we'll see you again next time.